40 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Steel.
I'm Linda Kenyon in Washington. President Biden has declared a state of emergency in California as the state confronts the latest storm system. CBS's Steve Futterman is there.
In many parts of Northern California, they are stacking sandbags. Last week, the concern was snow. This week, it's rain and floods. The rain is already coming down, and it's melting snow. That combination is what worries officials.
Flooding is imminent. Please evacuate your residents now.
Residents who are staying are trying their best to get ready.
We have our solar-powered lamps ready.
In some areas, the rains are forecast to continue into next week. Steve Futterman, CBS News, Los Angeles.
President Biden is responding to the latest jobs report, which showed more than 300,000 positions were added last month. Here's CBS's Stephen Portnoy.
The president calls it a good jobs report, but investors worry it will lead the Federal Reserve to increase interest rates at a faster clip. The next report on consumer prices is due next Tuesday. Mr. Biden says he hopes it will show inflation to be in solid shape.
I feel confident that we're headed in the right direction.
Asked about budget proposals House Republicans are beginning to offer, Mr. Biden said one GOP plan would result in drastic federal cuts to police, firefighters, and health care.
I don't know. We just have a very different value set.
Stephen Portnoy, CBS News, Washington.
Sexual assaults are up at military academies nationwide. CBS's Cammie McCormick has that story.
One in five females say they experienced unwanted sexual contact. This report shows an 18% jump in assaults over the previous year. The Navy in particular showed nearly double the number. The student survey found increases in everything from touching to rape at all of the schools.
Suspected drug cartel members in Mexico have handed over five people reportedly involved in the deadly kidnapping last Friday of four Americans. Two Americans and a Mexican woman were killed when gunmen opened fire on the four U.S. citizens in the city of Matamoros. The Americans had come to Mexico for a medical procedure. We're learning more details about yesterday's mass shooting at a Jehovah's Witness meeting hall in Hamburg, Germany. CBS's Holly Williams catches us up.
German officials say the gunman had a sports shooting license to carry the pistol he used. Police also say they'd previously received an anonymous letter warning them that the shooter may have undiagnosed mental health issues.
Eight people were killed in that attack, including the shooter who killed himself.
Hello there. Hello. Witness
priests Edward greeting crowds of people in Edinburgh today. He was named the new Duke of Edinburgh. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual
A progressive voice from Manitowoc to Janesville. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Strep throat is going around Wisconsin. The Department of Health Services is reporting a spike in cases. Most of them are kids and their parents. Doctors say if you have a fever and a sore throat, you should get screened. If you don't take care of it, strep throat can cause kidney problems and rheumatic fever. Police want to know who left anti-Semitic pamphlets found in Wausau this week. Civic Media's Melissa Kay reports.
Rabbi Benjamin Altshuler of the Mount Sinai congregation in Wausau said the papers can be interpreted as free speech, but encourages people that are troubled to make firm efforts to combat hate. For Civic Media News, I'm Melissa Kay.
In sports, Marquette plays UConn in the Big East Tournament semifinals tonight. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripes Cast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous Ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
As goes Wisconsin.
Mandela Barnes, future runs. Not yes, not no.
You know, I'm not closing the door, right? Like, taking a loss is not easy. And it's tough, too, when it's such a razor-thin margin. You know, I know some people who just get up right away and decide they want to run again.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not there. But, you know, it's all timing.
Celebrating all things Wisconsin. As goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Weekdays 11 to 2 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk from Butler to Windlake. Always streaming at waukradio.com. The Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Wisconsin's home for rational talk radio.
And never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I didn't know it was Kimberly Guilfoyle's birthday. And at her birthday party, Donald Trump complained about the rigged election. Happy birthday. They rigged the election. They stole the election from me. They used COVID to cheat. He said, would you want that guy coming to your birthday party? I mean, at some point, then you go, just, you're a downer. Go away. You know, go in the corner and brood. Go in the closet and yell at yourself. Here's a mirror. Tell to someone who really actually cares, because none of us, I don't know, very, very strange stuff. But here's the thing. I mean, as more and more comes out of this Dominion lawsuit, as more and more we find out about Fox News and what they really think of the audience, I'm hoping that light bulbs will go on. I'm hoping that epiphanies will be had, and maybe we could, I don't know, start talking to each other again. And that's why I've asked my good friend Craig Harrington to come talk with us. Craig is the research director over at Media Matters, Media Matters for America, mediamatters.org, the website. They've got a new initiative popping up, focusing on what Fox News knew and what they did with what they knew. The new campaign is foxnew.com. Craig, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So walk me through the foxnew.com website and what you guys are working on.
Sure. So the sort of long story short is that Media Matters has been acting as the spearhead of a campaign called Drop Fox for a number of years, where we have been encouraging cable providers, as well as advertisers who buy packages on cable networks, to drop Fox from their advertising buys and to drop Fox from their network lineups. And what we're doing now with this new initiative, Fox New, that's K-N-E-W, foxnew.com, is we're trying to educate the public in the run-up to a couple of very important contract renegotiations that Fox is doing with their cable providers. We're trying to educate the public about the sort of tax that all of us are paying, all of us who subscribe to any cable service or to DirecTV. We're paying a premium to carry Fox on our cable packages, even though 99% of cable news viewers don't watch Fox News. And that premium is going to supporting Fox's political operations and its propaganda initiatives. And the most important of these that's in the news today is Fox's defamation initiative against Dominion voting systems and Fox's propagation of the big lie in the wake of the 2020 election. Fox News went all in on election lies and conspiracy theories in the wake of Donald Trump's failed re-election bid in 2020. They promoted conspiracy theories on air hundreds of times that they knew were false when they promoted them. They specifically defamed two companies by name, Dominion Voting Systems and Smartmatic, both of whom are suing Fox right now in multi-billion dollar lawsuits for reputational damage and for actual damages that they received as a result of Fox attacking them specifically hundreds of times over the course of months in the wake of the 2020 election. Fox knew that they were telling their audience lies. They knew that they were hosting liars and conspiracy theorists on their air, and many of their own hosts and guests, paid contributors, network personnel, employees whose checks are ostensibly signed by Rupert Murdoch himself. Employees of the network were not just allowing lies to be broadcast on their air, but they were often peddling them, pushing them, parroting them themselves. And what we are trying to expose to the public is that Fox knew this was a lie. They knew that they were engaging in, frankly, a defamation campaign against these businesses and in fraud against their viewing public. And what we think is that the people who are paying Fox's bills through their cable subscriptions and people who are paying Fox's bills through their advertising purchases, they need to know what they're actually supporting, which is not a news organization, but it is a partisan propaganda outlet. And we don't say that lightly, and we don't say that pejoratively. It is actually definitively true. Fox is not a news outlet. And part of the reason they put news in the name is because if you were to watch Fox, if it were called Bravo, you wouldn't watch any programming that came out of that channel, whatever number it is on your cable box, whatever number it is on the dial, you would not think that is news. You would think it was comedy or satire. You'd think it was a skit. You would think it was entertainment, but you would not think it was news. And you wouldn't think that it has the protections, the very broad protections we afford the news under the First Amendment. You'd think it was responsible to a different standard. And that's the standard we want Fox to be held accountable to.
Yeah, no, I mean, what's interesting is the tagline, fair and balanced. They're anything but fair or balanced. Yeah. But, you know, even Tucker Carlson in the lawsuit said they're not news, they're entertainment. And that's kind of telling, I guess, in a certain way. But I look at some of these emails and some of these texts that have been you know, put out, and the communications back and forth behind the scenes, where, as you've said, they knew what they were doing. And yeah. I look at the Rupert Murdoch testimony where he said it's not about red or blue, it's about green. At the end of the day, our democracy, our country, you know, the fair and balanced, the logo, all it had to do with, it was about money, all about money.
Yeah, and it's one thing, you know, you could be the CEO of CBS, Les Moonves, during the 2016 election, very famously said that he didn't think Donald Trump was good for America or good for democracy, but he was good for CBS. And that was seen as, frankly, a very craven thing to say, a very cynical business perspective. But it was true that what Donald Trump brought, his sort of reshaping of politics, made a lot of people buy subscriptions to newspapers. It made a lot of people turn on the TV. It made a lot of people watch the news. And it did make the news more profitable. But the difference is that when CBS Evening News went on air, when Scott Pelley was anchoring, when Nora O'Donnell was doing stand-ups from the White House, when their reporters or their contributors were providing commentary for their audience, for their millions of people who tune in every night and every morning to watch CBS for the news, they were held to a standard where what they were reporting was factually true, or at the very least, that they believed it was true when it went on air. They had done the due diligence. They had done the work. What we know from Fox and what Media Matters has been detailing for now almost 20 years, and what we know now in minute and intimate detail through these internal communications that have been released by Dominion as part of their defamation lawsuit, we know that Fox did not do any diligence. Fox did not do any fact-checking. Fox did not do anything that news operations do to vet the information that it was putting out there to its roughly 3 or so million daily viewers. And since they were intentionally misleading that audience, since they were knowingly misleading that audience, they have to be held to a standard. And the standard for defamation, the standard that they are trying to defeat in this case against Dominion, in the other case against Smartmatic, and in myriad defamation cases that they may or may not face in civil litigation going forward, or that they're currently dealing with or suppressing in some other way. The standard for proving defamation against a news organization is extremely high, and it ought to be high. The New York Times shouldn't be thrown in jail for getting a story wrong if they followed the methodology correctly. The difference between the New York Times and Fox News is that the New York Times is trying to do it right. Right. And Fox is not. And
they've admitted it. I mean, you've literally got the back and forth between their three biggest stars saying, you know, this is bad for our stock.
They're putting the word news in scare quotes. When they're talking about the supposed journalists, the real news side, they put it in quotes. They say news even the opinion makers at Fox, they think that the news department at Fox is a joke. They realize that it is the sort of sheep's clothing for the propaganda apparatus that is Fox. The reason they call it news, CNN doesn't call itself news. CNN is an acronym. It used to mean cable news network, but no one thinks about that. No one thinks about what MSNBC means. But Fox News, it puts it right in the name, puts it right in front of you, because they know if they didn't lie to you right at the outset, you would never, ever believe that what you're watching was news. It's more akin to, it's closer to the National Enquirer than it is to the New York Times.
Wow.
And people are now beginning to realize that. And I don't say National Enquirer lightly. Literally, one of the sources for one of Fox's major news hosts, one of their stars for Fox Business Network, and one of their weekend stars is Maria Bartiromo. And one of the emails that we saw was an email from a woman who claimed that she has visions in her dream. She sleepwalks into like an astral plane, and the wind tells her that she's a ghost, and she knows not to believe the wind. She signed her email Mars, and she included all of these detailed conspiracy theories about how Dominion voting machines were stealing the election results in key swing states and changing votes. Maria Bartiromo forwarded that to her producers. She ran with that on her program. The mouthpiece for that wild conspiracy theory, like a chain email that you'd get from your grandmother. The mouthpiece for that was Sidney Powell, who was an attorney working for the Trump campaign at the time, or at least working as aligned with the Trump campaign at the time, trying to overturn the election results in Pennsylvania and Wisconsin and Arizona and in Georgia. Maria Bartiromo ran with that, ran with something that was lower quality than the chain emails that we used to get from our great aunts in the early days of the internet.
And the thing is you would think this is all a joke if they didn't have so much outweighted power, because you look at the legislatures across this country. I mean, you know, my state senator, you know, my son called me and said, I'm going to meet our state senator. I'm going, I wouldn't be excited. He's an election denier. He's one of the guys who wanted to overturn our election because he believes Trump won the election here. Because of what comes out of fake news.
Yeah.
So do you think that there's going to be that moment of epiphany? Because look, I look at what Tucker Carlson has done with the January 6th video. He told us, I looked at 40,000 hours and we got this minute of people walking between ropes and the people mulling around, taking pictures of each other. I liked what the one guy said. It's kind of like on the morning of 9/11, you know, taking pictures before the planes crashed, saying it's such a beautiful day.
Here's Muhammad Atta checking in at Boston Logan Airport. That guy's not a terrorist.
Yeah, he's walking between the ropes.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the kind of insanity that people are buying, and the number of emails I'm getting from people going, you know, the government's covering all this up. Those people in jail are now, you know, political prisoners and martyrs. And this Fox News led, right wing led propaganda is dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
So are people, do you have any faith that the faithful, because look, you and I know what's going on, and you know, people who are listening to this program surely know what it's about. But are the people who bought it, the folks who are viewing this stuff, do they get it?
You know, the people who sincerely believe the lies about 2016, 2018, 2020, 2022, they're not really retrievable in most cases. But what we know is that most of the people who were promoting those lies on Fox did not believe the lies when they were telling them. It's one thing to be sincerely lost, and there are lots of people who are sincerely lost. There are lots of people who would look at me and think that I'm sincerely lost, right? Yep. And we're not able to build a bridge with one another, but we can be civil. The difference between people who believe that one another are operating with different systems of foundational universal beliefs is whether or not you're going to actually motivate those people to hurt one another or to harm one another, to dislike one another. And that's what Fox News does. You know, you talked about the January 6th videotapes that Tucker Carlson has cherry-picked from. He had 46,000 hours of exclusive video that was provided to him several weeks ago by Speaker Kevin McCarthy, which one of my researchers actually uncovered a piece of tape from January 3rd, where Tucker Carlson was holding out support against then Representative McCarthy, who was hoping to win the speakership. And what my researcher, Zach Pleat, found was that on his program on January 3rd, Tucker Carlson demanded that McCarthy release that video or he wouldn't support him. for speakership. He would never get the support of the fringe, and he would never get the support of Tucker. And look who gets the exclusive. Look who gets the access to that video. Just Tucker. That was absolutely like a very straightforward quid pro quo that went a little bit under the radar at the time. But here he has 46,000 hours of footage, and the actual new footage that he was showing during his now 3 days of hour-long specials on January 6th, he showed about 4 minutes of new footage. So that's one, that's less than a tenth of a percent of the actual video that he has. So he actually really doesn't have much exculpatory evidence at all. And of course, all of his footage he shows still shows people committing felony trespassing. None of them are supposed to be there. All of them broke through a police line. All of them are guilty of just the crime of being in the building at the wrong time. I've never been to those parts of the Capitol. And I work in DC. I've lived here for a decade. This is the people who broke into the Capitol are often not going to be reachable. They're not going to be able to be convinced that they have been poisoned by propaganda. And that's why something like Fox News, the Drop Fox initiative, is so important, is because what we have to do is stymie the flow of that propaganda. We have to cut it off at the source. Fox is not a news organization. They do not have First Amendment protections that are afforded to the New York Times and the Washington Post and MSNBC and CNN. They don't have a news gathering operation. They're a partisan propaganda outlet. And partisan propaganda has to pay to be on air. They don't get paid to be on air. And what we're asking is for cable providers to really think about that. Right now, Fox, they only have, say, let's be charitable and say they have twice the audience of CNN and MSNBC. They get paid 5 or 6 times as much as CNN and MSNBC to be carried on cable packages, which means that they have a gigantic outsized amount of profit margin versus those other news gathering operations. And we see this. Fox's primetime hosts, their contributors, their guests, they get paid more than their counterparts at other networks. Fox has more money through this, just the carriage fees alone. Fox makes almost nothing from advertising. The Drops Fox initiative over the past decade has been very successful at discouraging advertisers from going on Fox. They basically just sell MyPillow ads. You might see 40% of the ads during midday on Fox News are actually ads that Fox News buys. They fill their own airtime. And then there's like a third of them that are MyPillow, and then a handful of things, catheters, vegetable-based nutritional supplements, you know, a handful of advertisers advertise on Fox. If they didn't have those carriage fees, that network would potentially atrophy and collapse. And we're asking cable networks to think, like, do you want to be the ones supporting Fox? Fox, this poison on our democracy. You want to be the ones putting money in their pocket? Because you don't have to do it.
No, I'm right there with you. Now my mind is going, to the Trump endorsed catheters.
Trumpy bear catheters. It's the wave of the future. And this is I don't mean to steamroll here, but I'm sort of feeling myself, and so we can keep going. Fox, the Dominion lawsuit that we mentioned at the outset, the way that these sorts of lawsuits often work is. Are you familiar with John Grisham? Do you ever read that?
Yeah, I've never read one of his books, but I know who he is.
So in 1995, Matt Damon, one of his first starring roles, Matt Damon plays the lawyer in a movie called The Rainmaker. And The Rainmaker is about everyone who's listening to my voice can respect this. It's about a predatory health insurance company that's refusing to pay for the traumatic condition of one of their insurance claimants. And the claimant takes them to court. And rather than settling, they're offered a sort of petty settlement. The insurance company tries to have it dismissed, and they fail, which Fox has failed against Dominion. The insurance company offers a petty settlement, and they turn it down because this guy had grievous injuries, serious, life-threatening, traumatic injuries that the insurance company refused to pay. And he eventually takes them to court, and they win the case in front of a jury, and they soak the insurance company. It's a gigantic number by 1995 standards. I think it's like $50 million. And it's so much money that it destroys the company financially, not because they can't afford to pay that one, but because it unlocks the dam of other suits, because it proves the concept that you can win this case. The defamation lawsuit brought by Dominion, which everyone has been following, it's been top of news for a month, it's been top of news for a year, is $1.6 billion in reputational and actual damages. The defamation lawsuit brought by Smartmatic is $2.7 billion in reputational and actual damages. If Dominion can prove that you can successfully sue Fox for defamation, the Smartmatic suit will sail, right? It will be greased skids and suddenly create a gigantic problem, because Fox is a big, powerful company, but Fox isn't Apple, right? Fox doesn't have enough cash that it could just buy Kazakhstan tomorrow, which Apple could. Fox has like $4 or $5 billion worth of cash. And if these two defamation lawsuits even come in anything close to what the claimants are asking for in injuries and punitive damages, it will soak the company and it will open the floodgates for other things. Like, you know who else Fox is arguably defamed? Greta Thunberg.
No, last Friday we had Nina Jankowicz on to talk about, you know, she's in the process of raising money to bring a suit. And, you know, I was thinking, you know, hey, Christine Blasey Ford, there's got to be a name that could come up from the past. Greta Thunberg, sure. There are a bunch of people that they've ridiculed, mocked, defamed, attacked, and sent the audience after that, you know, could obviously line up and sue them for decades to come.
In 2017, Media Matters, I was just about to leave Media Matters and go into the campaign world at the time. But Hillary Clinton had this fascinating interview. She was being interviewed, I think it was in late 2017, and she was talking about how Fox was still obsessed with her. And at that point, she's just a retired lady. She's just a retired grandmother, right? She's not running for anything, and she's never going to run for anything again. And she's just sitting there on stage having a conversation at some Clinton Global Initiative thing. And she goes, you know, the way Fox News is obsessed with me, it's really starting to feel like actual malice. Actual malice is the standard in defamation. She just mentioned, she's a lawyer. She's an incredibly smart woman, a frustratingly competent woman. She mentions actual malice on stage at an event in, I think it was 2017. And all of a sudden Fox didn't mention her name for days.
Wow.
She had been a central figment of their programming. And all of a sudden she mentions actual malice. And the lawyers at Fox were like, do not mention this woman's name. Get her off the air. Do not talk about her. And like, you know who else they've gone after just as much? Hunter Biden, Hillary Clinton, Chelsea Clinton, the Obama family. The number of people who have been faced by the propaganda apparatus of Fox, using the veneer, using the sheep's clothing of the word news to just run political hit campaigns against normal people and against public figures. That list is longer than you and I. We could read until the sun explodes and we wouldn't get to the end of that list. And all of those people would suddenly have a real legal framework if Dominion wins. And so I'm not an optimist, right? Like, there's no silver linings from the Trump administration. There's plenty of reason to be worried, but Fox has never been as afraid as they are now.
No,
they've
you're right.
Never if, been
if,
in
if
the hot
they
water
lose,
they
this
now.
This could open the floodgates. So what do you think the chances of that are happening are? I've talked to some legal people who are saying, don't get your hopes up. This is hard to prove. I say already there's been enough damage done to Fox just by exposing through discovery all of the things that were said back and forth. I know you're not a lawyer either, but I'm sure you've talked to people who have maybe, handicapped this out. What do you think the chances are?
Yeah, I think, and Media Matters is actually, we have a number of clips. If you go to our website, mediamatters.org, you can see a number of legal experts who were interviewed on television talking about this. We have a couple of them from CNN, a couple of them from MSNBC. It's very easily to argue that the case of defamation has been made. The standard of actual malice has been met. The question is, what is the damage going to be? There was a time when in a case very similar to this against between Donald Trump and the USFL in the 1980s, or against Donald Trump and the NFL in the 1980s, a court found that the NFL had really, really jobbed Donald Trump and the USFL. But the court hated Trump so much that they only awarded him $1.14 in damages that I think was payable in 10-year increments. And it was totally insane. It was a deeply offensive ruling in his favor. I don't think that's where we're going to be.
Right.
You know, it's not going to be an NFL versus USFL settlement. It could be less than what Dominion is searching for, though really any number would be shockingly damaging. Anything that's in the millions would be seriously problematic.
No,
for
anything.
They don't have
that
kind of money.
Any decision that they have to pay out, the admission that they were wrong, is there any way this gets settled out of court, or does this go to a decision?
Yeah, so the way that the process works now is both of them seem like they really are headed for trial. When you first bring a suit like this, Fox probably already offered a settlement that would have been it's called a no-fault settlement. Fox would have admitted, quote, no fault or injury, and they would have given an amount to settle the case with the claimant. But if you think about this, Dominion Voting Systems is now synonymous with the word election fraud. Dominion Voting System makes election voting machines. They make electronic voting machines, and they design software for electronic voting machines. So does Smartmatic. And these companies, this is their core business. This is what they do. Yeah. And they are now synonymous with fraud, right? Dominion will never get a contract in Alabama ever again. No. Dominion will never get a contract in Arkansas, Kansas, Texas, even in like swing states, purple states. Like
a progressive voice for rural Wisconsin. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. An atmospheric river drops rain on already hard-hit California, where rain and snowmelt lead to flooding concerns. The northern part of the state was hit overnight. To the south, is this Huntington Beach resident says.
It doesn't bother me at all. It's just, it's always fine. I think just rain, any kind of weather I get. I'm from Oklahoma, so this rain's home for me.
Silicon Valley Bank fails and Fed sees its assets, the biggest bank failure since 2008. Allison Greenberg, CEO of a maternity care startup based in LA, says
one of our amazing investors alerted us, and essentially he said, the bank is imploding. Get out as soon as you can.
She says nearly all of their business funds were transferred just in time. Paul Flores is sentenced to 25 years to life in prison for killing California college student Kristen Smart in 1996. Her remains were never found. Denise Smart is Kristen's mother.
Today is a day not really of joy. It's a day of relief that Kristen's voice was heard.
CBS News Brief. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
The Shaw 101 FM. Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. It's a busy day of cleaning up downed tree limbs and power lines. More than 100,000 homes and businesses lost power at the height of the latest Wisconsin storm, mainly in the southeast. The bad weather forced many schools to close, start late, or go remote today. Wildlife experts in Wisconsin are concerned about bird flu this spring. Despite what it looks like outside, birds will be flying north again soon, and infected birds will infect healthy birds as they travel. Last year, 29 domestic flocks around Wisconsin got infected. Nationwide, nearly 59 million birds died in the biggest animal disease outbreak in U.S. history. In sports, Marquette plays UConn in the Big East Tournament semifinals tonight. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Civic Media promised you something big to celebrate our new and still growing network of radio stations. When we announced the one-day million-dollar advertising giveaway for Wisconsin businesses, you responded.
Just wanted to echo your sentiments about the advertising. That's really a cool deal and really remarkable.
$1 million of free advertising. Now, if you missed this chance to work with our team, go to civicmedia.us and click on the sponsorship tab. One of our local sales pros will get right back to you. Civicmedia.us and sponsorship.
The Devil's Advocates.
Jake from Milwaukee, you get the last word this hour.
Okay, well, Trump is totally innocent. But it's obvious that George Soros, Nancy Pelosi, BLM, with Antifa, and then Hillary's emails, with Hunter Biden's laptop, gas, high, Afghanistan, cut and run. I rest my case, Truth.
What about Benghazi, Jake? You forgot Benghazi.
I forgot Benghazi, I'm sorry. And Benghazi, I rest my case.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
Catch Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow at its brand new time, 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays.
The city of Shanghai started administering an inhalable COVID-19 vaccine. I hear a lot of you saying the same thing I had in my head. I don't know about that.
As long as they are not just crop dusting everyone.
Crop dusting, that's exactly what I think people would be fearful of. I would not trust the Chinese government. I would trust people who really know about inhaling something and the good that it does you. Of course, I'm talking about Dom and Crute.
I asked what kind of family she wanted. She said, a family like yours.
Learn more about adopting a teen at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Body focus on properly clothing its women members. The Hightower Radio.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, again, some really interesting stuff and some good stuff coming out of the president's budget and some recent announcements about, you know, making workers' lives better. And, you know, federal workers going to get a bump, according to the most recent report. President Biden, I guess, has thrown out the idea of a 5.2% raise for federal employees. Now, I don't think this is, I don't know that this is quite enough, but it's better than what they've gotten. I guess they're saying it's the highest increase, the largest increase since the Carter administration. But again, this is one of those moments. You've had things held off for so long. The perfect storm of this massive inflation. We'll find out if this is enough, and here to share some thoughts on if this is good, if this is a good starting point, if this is, well, not so great. I've asked Daniel Horowitz to come talk with us. Daniel's the Deputy Director of Legislative Affairs there at the American Federation of Government Employees, AFGE. Daniel, thanks for taking time for us.
My pleasure. Good to be here.
So the president's got this, I guess this is the number, 5.2%, right?
Yeah, that's what it's in his budget that he released yesterday. And it's definitely a step in the right direction. But to our way of thinking, it doesn't go far enough. And what we need to be doing is closing the tremendous pay gap that's opened up between the federal and the private sector. So we're going to keep pushing for a higher rate than the president has proposed, although we're very appreciative of the step he's taken.
And how big is that gap? I saw something, your president, Everett Kelly, came out and said that, you know, federal salaries are 23% lower on average than people equally qualified in the private sector. Is that an accurate number? That seems enormous.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the case. It's a very large gap. And it tends to be widening all the time because those federal pay increases are not keeping pace with the private sector, particularly in the inflationary times we live in. It is the largest increase in several decades, what President Biden has proposed, but you have to remember that inflation is running higher than it has in a number of decades. So the number may seem high in these difficult budgetary times, but look at what's happened with inflation in just the last couple of years has run up about 13%.
I can hear my conservative friends losing their mind, though, Daniel. Those lazy government workers getting this huge raise. I didn't get this raise. You can already hear it, can't you?
Well, there's always some of that in the background, but I think it helps to think, who are these government workers who are demonized all the time? Well, they're the transportation security officers who protect us all in the airports. Starting pay for a TSO, and it's slated to go up now some, fortunately, but it's been around $30,000. It's barely above the minimum wage. It's close to the poverty line in many cases for a family. Food safety inspectors, we're all dependent on them for the safety of our meat products and produce and so on. Their pay isn't much different either. These are extremely stressful jobs. We're all dependent on them for our very lives. And let me tell you something else. These people are not out there teleworking. They were working straight through the pandemic every single day. And I don't think people worried too much, didn't have to worry that the food they were eating during those times wasn't safe. So there's a lot that we depend on these workers for, who are unseen, and I think it's only fair that something be done to at least keep their pay as close as possible to inflation.
Yeah, at least to be able to, I don't know, keep a roof over your head, food on the table, not having to have the kids go to school to beg for free lunches. I don't know, just basic dignity sounds reasonable to me. Now, you brought up a number of professions, and I've got friends who work in the Bureau of Prisons, and you know, some of the conditions there are not great. The wages, same thing. All of these jobs. And I think we forget about this because things just seem to work. No matter what administration's in and how bad or how good they may be, people just keep showing up to the jobs, even with all the attacks. And I can't, this is, again, one of these things where, you know, I look at public school teachers. I don't know how or why they get up every day and do what they do, but thank goodness that they do. Same thing for the folks that you represent. I don't know how you put up with all the attacks and all the nonsense that we get from political leaders and cable news. And I don't know how you do it, but thank goodness they do.
Well, absolutely. And it's prison guards, as you say. It's border patrol. A lot of politicians wring their hands over conditions at the border. Well, how much worse might things be if we didn't have our border patrol working there every day? Again, they're not teleworking. They work throughout the pandemic. And we need to do everything we can to retain people in the government who are the best people that we can recruit. And look at our VA, for example. There are tens of thousands of vacant jobs in VA. These are doctors and nurses and clinicians who care for our veterans. And we can't fill those jobs. And in large measure, it's working conditions, and it's the pay is not competitive. So across the board, we need to be closing that pay gap between the public sector and the private sector.
Yeah.
That's the key to the long-term health of the government and really to our democracy when you think about everything that the federal government does.
But when you have people, Daniel, who say, you know, government can't, shouldn't, or won't, or, you know, it's all bad. When you've got people who don't believe in government, you know, then in charge of your pay scales and your working conditions and the things that are important to working people, are we surprised that things aren't great?
I'm always a little surprised and disappointed, I guess. But I think, and it may not be all that apparent to people who are just watching cable news and seeing all the conflict, but we are making progress in some important areas. And one area is in competitive hiring.
Right.
We talk a lot about pay, and pay is certainly important. Pay is the key to keeping the best people in the government. But we also have to have good procedures in place for hiring people at the front end. And if you go back to the 19th century, we had a patronage system. And every time the president changed, he would bring in all of his buddies and fill up the agencies. And that was the patronage system. And then 4 years, it would change over again. Well, it became apparent even to the leaders of the day that you couldn't have a modern state if you didn't have a professional, knowledgeable civil service. So started a system of an apolitical civil service exams, professionalizing this whole group. So, you know, that was how we got people landed on the moon. That was how we won World War II. That was how we got out of the Great Depression, was through the professional civil service. But if you look at what's happening now, that's been seriously eroded. And it's not just the pay, but it's how hiring has been eroded, and people have adopted what's called direct hiring, which is shorthand for just hiring their friends and slotting them into the civil service. So we need to undo all of that.
Yeah.
And there is bipartisan progress there. We have something called the Chance to Compete Act. It's making its way through Congress on a bipartisan basis, and it seeks to revive these competitive hiring procedures that have served us so well over the 20th century and really need to be brought back and reinforced.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring this up, because there was a story not too long ago. Former President Trump, evidently some of his insiders are floating this trial balloon of something called Schedule F, I guess is what they're saying. Well, they're planning on, if he's reelected, to fire thousands of civil servants, thousands of government employees, and to return to that kind of patronage system, to where you got to be loyal, you got to kiss the ring. And look, I don't want that. I don't want Trump to be able to do that. I don't want Biden to be able to do that. I don't want any president to be able to go, we're going to bring in all of our people and they're going to be loyal to me instead of the American people, the taxpayers who they work for. It seems what you laid out, the history of how we got here, should be front and center and pretty important for people to think about.
Absolutely. Well, we've just come through this pandemic, and obviously people have lots of opinions about the public health effort and how it did well, how it didn't do so well. But how much worse would it be if all of those doctors and virologists were hired simply based on party loyalty rather than their professional credentials? So we really have to get back as much as possible to the merit-based service, and not just former President Trump, but Governor DeSantis and other people who aspire to be president have expressed interest in this concept of Schedule F, which is really patronage on a grand scale. They would simply declare that large swaths of the civil service are policymaking jobs. Not only they can be hired anybody they want, but they just fire them if they're disloyal without any sort of due process. So this would be a huge departure from 100-plus years of what's made this country work.
No, it's crazy where we're heading. And this Chance to Compete Act, I mean, how would this be different from the civil service exam now, or would it not change that? I get what you're saying. We want merit-based hiring systems. How would this change how things are happening now that would be recognizable to the outsider?
I think anybody who's gone on USA Jobs and tried to fill out a job application realizes what the shortcomings are. A lot of it's based on self-assessment. So if you lie about your qualifications or you exaggerate, which I think most people are prone to do, you may well get a job ahead of somebody who's actually qualified. Well, all this law is saying is let's do some form of objective assessment. Let the government define what are the skills it needs. Let's have an objective assessment by someone who has expertise, and then have a passing requirement, determine who's qualified. But once you're qualified, the positive aspect of this is you'd be eligible for jobs across the government. So instead of repeatedly going through this frustrating process, getting nowhere, you could apply once, your qualifications could be determined, and you'd be eligible for a lot of jobs. And when we're trying to compete against the private sector, those sorts of streamlining measures are really what's important.
You listen to the Rick Smith Show with Daniel Horowitz, Deputy Director of the Legislative Department at AFGE, AFGE.org, their website, if you want to take a look at that. I got to get your thoughts on this thing this week with Lauren Boebert. I'm sure you saw the Colorado representative questioning the head of the Office of Personnel Management, the OPM director, during a committee of the Oversight and Accountability Committee. And she got a leaked document, Daniel. There's a secret, super secret leaked document that said, you know, a quarter of your members, a quarter of federal employees, they're not logging in. They're when they're doing that telework, they're just gone, disappearing. In fact, on vacation, logging in maybe somewhere when they're on vacation. I did find it was interesting that the OPM woman did put her in her place, but it's this kind of cherry picking of information that I find kind of dangerous for your members. I wanted to give you a chance to address that.
Well, I was there in the hearing room when those comments were made, and I feel they were rebutted right on the spot. First of all, I didn't see the document, but it appears she was waving up something from during the Trump administration, so that was kind of humorous in itself. But if you think about the diversity of federal jobs, as we talked about food safety inspectors, there are park rangers, there are border patrol agents. Do you really expect these people to be logged into a computer 8 hours a day or out doing their jobs? There was really, I think, nothing to her remarks. But, these are extreme attacks. I think people understand that people in agencies are working hard. Obviously, there are opportunities for improvement, and our people are committed to working with their agencies to improve customer service, continue to dig out from the pandemic wherever possible.
Yeah, but the reason I bring this up is because you've got people in government who are looking at federal employees who can't really defend themselves as, you know, basically just whipping boys or pinatas that they can attack. And you're right. The woman did push back and say, look, those are Trump era numbers, if they're accurate at all. But still, it's still saying that a quarter of the federal employees didn't log in. And this is where having people on these committees who have agendas that are about attacking federal workers as opposed to how to get the best workers is kind of interesting to me.
Yeah, I think there are a number of ways of looking at the problem. First of all, get some actual data. Bringing out some shadowy document from several years ago and saying it's an important leak doesn't really serve anybody.
Right.
Gather some actual data. Second point I would make is our union, other public sector unions, support high performance. We have all kinds of measures to get people the training and the tools and the environment they need to succeed at work. And that ought to be the goal of everybody, including elected officials. So I think these sorts of partisan attacks should be put off to one side, and people should all focus on how do we get the most effective civil service we can possibly have.
Which brings me to the Show Up Act that's going on, because evidently there are a bunch of people who don't want federal employees working from home, even though what we've found from some of the studies that are out there is, you know, people who are working from home actually are happier, actually are more productive. Who knew when you would have happy employees that they would be more productive? But this move now to get everybody back into the workplace regardless of, you know, if it's right, wrong, good, bad. This seems to me to be the kind of vein that this kind of stuff is going through. We're going to make up attacks, whether they're accurate or not, just to prove the point that we need to get people back into the office. So I'm looking at this Show Up Act, and I'm first curious, where are you guys on this? And secondly, you know, we as working people, we should be fighting to make our conditions better, make ourselves more productive when we're happier. And this seems like, you know, something that has made people happier.
Yeah, well, I have quite a bit to say about the Show Up Act. The union is not in favor of this legislation. We're in favor of some portions of it that seek to collect more data from agencies about telework. What are the benefits? What are the downsides? And let's look at that. You know, there's nothing to object to there. But what this bill does that's very destructive is just reset the clock to before the pandemic and say every agency has to reset their telework arrangements back to 2019. Well, the world has changed a lot since 2019, and there are a couple of points I would make. First of all, more than half of our members were never teleworking at all, even when a lot of white-collar jobs particularly were teleworking for years in the private sector. So our members, because of the vital nature of their work in law enforcement, transportation security, food safety, we're never teleworking. The second point is we're competing constantly with the private sector, and telework is here to stay in the private sector. So if we're not offering a comparable benefit where it's appropriate, we're not going to be able to hire people. And I'll give you a very concrete example that we've learned about, and this is within the VA. Well, so many of our veterans have mental health difficulties and are seeking treatment. We have a tremendous problem with veteran suicide, as you know, and the VA is working to combat this. Well, there are not enough VA psychologists, mental health professionals, and there's not enough space to see all the veterans who want care. Veterans want this care through telehealth when they can, and the only way to get it to them is by recruiting VA psychologists working from home or remotely who can go through a whole series of appointments, one after the other, during the day. There isn't space in VA medical centers to even fit these people. Yeah. So if we were to reset the clock on telework, we would be literally telling potentially suicidal veterans that they could not get care in order to serve someone's political agenda. Well, that just isn't right.
I'm right there with you. And I'm against the Show Up Act as well. Another piece of legislation I got to get to before I let you go, this social media censorship bill that's out there, basically banning TikTok from the federal government. I'm not a TikTok fan. Something has to be done. The algorithm there is horrible, especially for our young people. But I'm curious your thought on this legislation, whether it's good, bad, if there's a better way to skin this cat. Your thoughts?
Well, beyond the TikTok issue, which is working its way through Congress, you know, in terms of whether this is a security threat and should it be on federal devices, all of that, there's that issue. But there's also a broader issue working its way through the House, which is what they call censorship of social media as a whole. And, you know, I'm sure your viewers will have heard of Hunter Biden's infamous laptop and the great threat it is to our republic. Well, some of our Republican friends think that Twitter delayed publication of information in 2020 about the Hunter Biden laptop. And again, this happened during the Trump administration. So don't blame Biden for this. But because of that delay, some folks now want to take it out of the hide of federal workers and actually punish them, fine them and fire them, in some cases up to $50,000 fines, if they tell social media companies about inaccurate stories or even foreign misinformation from Putin or from China that they may be carrying on their sites. So this is another misguided effort just to bash the civil service, when what we should be doing is making the government a positive employer and trying to get the best people in it.
It does come back to that, doesn't it? Daniel, I appreciate the time. I'd love to have you come back again and share some more thoughts. Keep up the great work.
Anytime, Rick. Nice to be here.
Good stuff. Daniel Horowitz, he is the deputy Deputy Director of Legislative Affairs there at the American Federation of Government Employees, AFGE, AFGE.org, their website. If you want to take a look at what they do, want to hear your thoughts, email me, Rick at the RickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1941. New Yorkers woke up to find a foot of snow blanketing their city. Nearly a million New Yorkers also discovered their usual routine was going to be disrupted. At 5 a.m., the Transport Workers Union had walked off the job, calling a strike against the Fifth Avenue Coach and New York City Omnibus Companies. The bus drivers' demands included a pay increase and an eight-hour workday. Many of the company's 3,500 employees were forced to work 60 hours or more a week. Michael Quill, the TWU president, led the strike. Quill was an Irish immigrant known for his energetic union leadership. The bus companies tried to turn public opinion against the strikers. They took out ads in the New York newspapers reading, "If you had to walk to work today, blame the transit workers' union." Other ads attempted to stir up anger by calling the union a communist-dominated, Moscow-directed outfit. Despite these tactics, thousands of other union workers across the city joined the bus drivers on the picket lines. Perhaps the most iconic moment of the strike came on St. Patrick's Day. The union had been denied a permit to join the city's annual parade. Undeterred, hundreds of union members donned TWU armbands and jaunty bus driver caps and marched anyway. The strike lasted for 12 days. Mayor LaGuardia sided with the company and urged the union to settle the strike. The union agreed to bring their negotiations to the New York State Mediation Board, where they won some ground on their demands, including a nine-hour workday. Labor History in Two brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in Two. I tell you, I like this story. Evidently, our Department of Homeland Security, keeping our borders safe. Evidently, there were some Canadian workers coming down from the Great White North to break a union strike down in Southern California. Medieval Times, they were sending a couple of knights, a third Medieval Times worker down to, they're on strike. Going to scab on those workers here in the U.S. and the Department of Homeland Security turned them away because they lacked the proper visas. Look, it's amazing what corporate America will do to try and deny workers the ability to form unions and get better wages, hours, and conditions. So, yep, good on them. And finally, I want to finish off with what I think is a couple of good stories real quick. New Hampshire, a state representative, a Republican state representative, Jeffrey Greeson. Evidently, Jeff wasn't happy with the plow driver who was plowing snow in front of his driveway and, wow, went off on a really, really angry, profane rant against the plow driver. He has been arrested, charged with disorderly conduct and criminal threatening, and good on him. What I find interesting is his office released a report, a statement saying, you know, both sides have reached an agreement, you know, to calm things down. No, you should be going to jail for that rant. And look, you know, plow drivers, those are the folks who are out there, you know, busting their behinds, you know, working, you know, 15, 18, 20 hours so the roads can be open, and you're going to do no. And finally, a federal judge has ordered Peter Navarro. Remember Peter Navarro, the Trumpkey? They've ordered him to give the National Archives 200 to 250 of his emails that he sent during the Trump administration in an official capacity from what? What you say? What is that? A private email account? but her emails, but Hillary's emails. Or the chance to lock him up. But her emails. Thanks so much for tuning in. You miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. Thanks for being here. We'll see you back here next time. But her emails.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.